Good morning. It's 6 o'clock, straight up, on July 24th, Tuesday. And let's see, I thought my dentist appointment was for Thursday. Turns out that it's today, so I'm going to lose an hour or so this morning for my work. See if I can't make it up a bit, by perhaps starting a bit early or perhaps on the other end after I get back from the dentist. I won't be reading today because of the irrigation, but with any luck I'll read tomorrow. I didn't get any reading in yesterday because I got called away early in the morning. And by the time I got back, my wife had already started laundry. And that was not a process to be interrupted. So, yeah, I didn't get any reading in yesterday. I did get some of the first of the copy edits loaded up. I've got a second major batch in overnight last night. So, I got plenty to do to bring the manuscript up to snuff. Some good catches. Some good feedback. Need to write a blurb. I forgot about that. Sydney Swanson has got a book coming out on August 5th called Saving Mars, which I did a beta read for her. And it's really a good book. I really did enjoy it. It's YA, don't let that bother you. I'm really anxious to see how she changed the ending, because I really enjoyed the book right up until the end. And I shared that with her. I'm not a big one on cliffhanger endings. So if the story breaks and the main plot isn't resolved, that's a cliffhanger. And if the story breaks in a book and the main plot isn't resolved, that's... I have a hard time with that. I ran into it with another book that I read recently. That we get to the end of the book and the main character was nowhere near out of danger. The main conflict was nowhere near resolved. The story was not anywhere near complete. And we got basically a to be continued. Now, the next book is already available. It's not like I have to wait a long time. But the point is, I was ready to get the next book right up until I fell off the cliff. At which point I said, no, not going there. Now, I understand it's pretty common in YA lit. I wish that were not the case. The feeling, of course, is that if you can get them hooked and hook them into the next book, then of course they'll go ahead and read the next book. Except that it works the opposite for me, because if I run off the end of the cliff, not only don't I read the next book, I don't recommend that book to anyone either. So, yeah, different people, different things. It works out for them. Okay, that's fine. But, no. So, but this book was really good, right up until the ending. And I had a long talk with her on chat one afternoon when I finished it, and explained my reservations about it. And we brainstormed some ideas about how it could work better, how it could work in a way that didn't make me feel like we had been what's the word? I'm not quite sure. Give me closure. I want closure in a book. That's the nature of a book. I want a book to be closed. When I get to the end of a short story, I want the short story to be over. I don't want a hook to make me buy the next one. If I liked it enough, I will go read the next one anyway. But by putting the hook in, it's sort of like you don't trust yourself or something. So I don't know. I'm not a big one on cliffhanger endings. And although I know a couple of you believe that actually I do write cliffhanger endings, the truth is no. No, I haven't written a cliffhanger ending. I do have cliffhanger chapters, but not very often do I have a cliffhanger. In fact, never have I had what I would consider to be a cliffhanger ending. I've built up to things and made people anxious to get the next book, but all of the plot lines from one book to another have been closed, with the exception of Tanith Fairport. The end of Ravenwood, I don't have her finding Gertie Pinecrest yet. And at the end of Zephyr's Call, she still hasn't found Gertie Pinecrest. But the truth is that that's the whole point of the trilogy, and that's the thread that carries these three books along. The Tanith Fairport Adventures in the Lammas Wood. So we'll see. And I don't consider that a cliffhanger. No one is in danger. No one is at risk. There are no major plot actions that are interrupted other than the journey, which I think is acceptable. In legal news yesterday, the Department of Justice pretty much said no, public comment is not really convincing to overthrow the settlement agreement, and they'll be pursuing other remedies for those publishers who did not sign off on the collusion settlement that the Department of Justice laid out. Dave Goffrin, who's a funny guy, wrote one of the letters that the DOJ has pointed out as counter-arguments to the foolishness that Authors Guild, the American Association of Publishers, put out regarding how much Amazon hurts authors, which is, it's not quite there. The idea that Amazon is a monopoly and that it's only through agency pricing that Amazon's grip on the marketplace was loosened, and that was a good thing. And unfortunately, the facts don't really hold up. One of the issues, of course, is that Amazon was the only player. Yeah, Sony had a device, but Amazon was the only player. Amazon created the ebook market. And we can argue that the ebook format has been around for a long time, that you've always been able to read ebooks for 20 years, blah, blah, blah. But that wasn't a market. That wasn't a consumer-grade technology that, to use the grandmother test, which is a little specious at this point because I'm old enough to be a grandfather, so it doesn't really, no. It's a market. They created the market. So it's not surprising that they had, at one point in 2010, the lion's share of that market. In fact, up until 2010, a very large portion of that market. But things started happening in 2010, not the least of which was the closing of Borders, which took the bookstore shopping experience out of the realm of regular possibility for most people in rural America, for I won't say most, a lot of people in rural America, where the only bookstore in town was the Borders. And with borders closed, the next choices are a 30-mile drive or online. And not surprisingly, people chose online. People started looking at things like the Nook, like things like Kobo, which isn't big in the United States, but is apparently quite large elsewhere. And so the market share of ebooks for Amazon has gone down. Not because of the pricing, but because competition in the marketplace has put other devices, other markets available to the retail level consumer. So the Kobo, and Kobo is a really interesting reader. I have a copy of it on my Android phone. Kobo with its social reading platform, just kind of dumb, but it's something a little different. And for those who engage in that sort of activity, it could be quite interesting, quite amusing. I probably should participate more. I'm not that sure that I will, but I probably should. The Nook. The problem with the Nook, of course, is that the catalog, the Barnes & Noble online catalog in support of the Nook, is dreadful. In terms of shopping experience, trying to find anything, trying to discover anything, is ridiculous. You can't really discover very much on the Nook platform. And it's one of the reasons I don't read on the Nook. I can't find anything. I have to know about it before I can find it. Amazon has several different ways of discovery. Bestseller lists, popularity lists, the also bots. People who looked at this page also looked at that page. People with your search history also looked at these things. So Amazon does a really good job of the one thing that everybody says, oh, you can't do on an ebook, which is discovery. And they do it very well. They do it in a way that is counterintuitive to the bookstore crowd. The person who goes into the bookstore and walks to the shelf and reads the titles on the shelf. That's certainly possible because you've got genre lists that allow you to do that. But, you know, how do you find the serendipitous work? The answer is the same way you always did, because I think most people, and I don't know this for sure, but, you know, after I spent 5 years in a bookstore business, people tend to go to the area of fiction that they're most interested in. And if you've got a great book that's not one of those, they're not going to see it. That's the thing that most people miss when they start talking about, oh, yes, well, we go to the bookstore to discover new works. No, you don't. No, you don't. Sorry. You might cast your eyes over the bargain bin at the front. You might snicker at the New York Times bestseller lists. That was one of the amusing things in the Department of Justice statement, was that they took exception to the fact that publishers are being held up as the arbiter of taste and quality. And one of the books that was cited as being their idea of quality was Snooki. So yeah, that one's going to bite them in the butt. To be fair, quality doesn't necessarily sell. And really what they're interested in is books that sell. And that's the point. Goes back to something else I read yesterday, which was why unique books don't find a market. And I forget where I read it now, but it was quite insightful. And it was sort of like, okay, you got five people together and you're going to go to a movie, but pretend you're not going to go to a movie. Pretend you're going to go get ice cream. what ice cream are you going to get? Well, something ridiculous like 4 of the 5 are going to get vanilla, because vanilla is the most popular ice cream flavor by far and away. Chocolate's the second. So the probability is that those 5 people are going to get chocolate, vanilla, or chocolate. And because there is a choice when you go, a lot of times people will branch out. Now, not always, but sometimes they'll branch out. Now, if you get there and there's only vanilla ice cream, it better be the best vanilla ice cream going, or they're not going to come back. So the idea with unique books is that they can't sell to a mass market, to hundreds of thousands of people, unless it's vanilla, unless it's something that they recognize and something that they value as being really good vanilla, because that's what most people want. Now, I think the analogy does fall down for the very reason that I just said, was that if you go to 32 flavors and you know that the ice cream is all really good, then you might find something a little different this time. Maybe you'll get cherry ripple or almond fudge, or yeah, you like vanilla. Vanilla's good. You have vanilla a lot, but this is an opportunity to try almond praline royale. Now, the problem is, from a mass market producer, from a big publisher standpoint, that willingness to gamble on the off flavors, on those different brands, is expensive and risky, because the thing that they know is that they can sell a ton of vanilla. And what they don't know is that if anybody's going to even want any almond praline royale. So it's an interesting challenge. But I also think that's why indie press, self-pubs, small press, I think that's where the real value and benefit lies, in creating value for both the author and the reader. Because I don't need to sell 100,000 units of a book to make a good living. I don't need to sell 50,000, although it would be nice to sell 50,000 of each of my books. I'll get there eventually, I'm sure. But that's bestseller territory. You talk about the New York Times. It's like I was going to save fiction. Right. Because there were crappy books on the New York Times bestseller list. Yeah, welcome to the real world. There have been crappy books on the New York Times bestseller list for at least 2 decades now. At what point did it become problematic? When women started buying porn? I think there's a problem here. Yeah, women in agency is definitely an issue. Oh, speaking of women in agency, I'm still going back over my mind over this 26-year-old, 25-year-old, 24-year-old probably, who says no social media manager should be older than 25. Now, because she did get the attention of the senior VP at Fleischmann Hillman. He did hold out a hand. I wonder if she's going to go. I can't imagine being introduced as that girl for the next 2 years as an intern. That's going to suck. But it might be the leg up. So maybe it was smart. Maybe she did a good thing. I don't know. Interesting. But yeah, Department of Justice, blah, blah, blah. David Goffrin did a really good job. He's a very good analyst. He's a very good writer. He wouldn't have... He hasn't been able to sell his fiction as well. Just curious. But, anyway. I made it. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day, and I'll talk to you then.